First verse. Narayana Sutuvacha Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudiraye. This is translation. Srila Sutta Goswami said, before reciting this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. 1, 2, 4. The purport. All the Vedic literatures and the Puranas are meant for conquering the darkest region of material existence. The living being is in the state of forgetfulness of his relation with God due to his being overly attracted to material sense gratification from time immemorial. His struggle for existence in the material world is perpetual, and it is not possible for him to get out of it by making plans. If he at all wants to conquer this perpetual struggle for existence, he must reestablish his eternal relation with God. And one who wants to adopt such remedial measures must take shelter of literatures such as the Vedas and Puranas. Foolish people say that the Puranas have no connection with the Vedas. However, the Puranas are supplementary explanations of the Vedas intended for different types of men. All men are not equal. There are men who are conducted by the mode of goodness, others who are under the mode of passion, and others who are under the mode of ignorance. The Puranas are so divided that any class of men can take advantage of them and gradually regain their lost position and get out of the hard struggle for existence. Srila Sutta Goswami shows the way of chanting the Puranas. This may be followed by persons who aspire to be preachers of the Vedic literatures and the Puranas. Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana and is especially meant for them who desire to get out of the material entanglement permanently. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:11, next verse. Vadanti tat tat vavidas tatvam yaj gyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdate. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Purport. The absolute truth is both subject and object, and there is no qualitative difference there. Therefore, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan are qualitatively one and the same. The same substance is realized as impersonal Brahman by the students of the Upanishads, as localized Paramatma by the Hiranyagarbhas or the yogis, and as Bhagavan by the devotees. In other words, Bhagavan, or the personality of Godhead, is the last word of the absolute truth. Paramatma is the partial representation of the personality of Godhead, and impersonal Brahman is the glowing effulgence of the personality of Godhead. As the sun rays are to the sun god. Less intelligent students of either of the above school sometimes argue in favor of their own respective realization. But those who are perfect seers of the absolute truth know well that the above three features of the one absolute truth are different perspective views seen from different angles of vision. As is explained in the first shloka of the first chapter of the Bhagavatam, the supreme truth is self-sufficient, cognizant, and free from the illusion of relativity. In the relative world, the knower is different from the known, but in the absolute truth, both the knower and the known are one and the same thing. In the relative world, the knower is the living spirit or superior energy, whereas the known is inert matter or inferior energy. Therefore, there is a duality of inferior and superior energy, whereas in the absolute realm, both the knower and the known are of the same superior energy. There are three kinds of energies of the supreme energetic. There is no difference between the energy and the energetic, but there is a difference of quality of energies. The absolute realm and the living entities are of the same superior energy, but the material world is of inferior energy. The living being in contact with the inferior energy is illusioned, thinking he belongs to the inferior energy. Therefore, there is the sense of relativity in the material world. In the absolute, there is no such sense of difference between the knower and the known, and therefore everything there is absolute. So what did you hear so far?
God says, be an agent.
Use the microphone.
So essentially the three principal energy, also mentioned an energy and energetic, as well as the spiritual world, there is no difference between the knower and the known in the absolute platform, but in the duality world, in the material world, there is a difference between the knower and the known. The knower is absolute truth and the known is the matter or the inferior energy. That's why there is superior and inferior.
Give us a couple of shlokas from the Gita that describes that.
Paratasmastu bhava anya means there is one shloka which said likely there is apara world and there is a para world. Means the para is always eternal and the apara is not eternal, temporary. In that context means he's defining on the superior energy and the inferior energy.
Okay, so what are you giving us? Parastasmatu bhava anya
yakto
vyaktap
sanatana.
Yaksak sarvishi bhuteshu. So that verse says that besides this material world, which is being described as being created and destroyed over and over again, there's a world that's never destroyed.
Never destroyed.
Okay. And what about, so that shows the differentiation. There's two worlds. One that is eternal, spiritual. The other one's destroyed over and over again. How about a verse that says that the superior energy is mixed into the inferior energy. This is describing in this verse how there's a mixture of these energies mm-hmm. in the material world. How about Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter? Aparayam yitostanyam prakritim virime param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayedam darite jagat. So Krishna says he describes the inferior energies. And he says that they are Bhumir, Apu, Anolo, Vayu, Kamano, Buddha, Evacha, Ahankara, Itiyame, Bina, Prakriti, Rashtada. These are his separated material energies. Then he says, Apare, Amitostonyam, Prakritim, Vidimi, Param. Besides these inferior energies, there's a superior energy of mine, which is the living entities who are struggling hard within the material energy and are maintaining it. Because they're there within material energy, then there's some animation to it. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any animation. If they weren't there, then matter wouldn't have any consequences because there'd be nobody to observe it. There'd be no conscious observer of matter.
And also there is, remember the Puranas, it says, Vishnu Sakti Paraprukta Kshetra Jankhya Tathapura Abhidya Karma Samjanera
Tritya
Shakti Rauchyate. That's also the same.
Say it.
Likely means Vishnu Sakti Parabrukta means it is likely the superior energy, but there are still Kshetra Jakhya Tathapara means there is still the knower of the body, and then the three Sakti means there are three inferior energies likely. The third one like Tatastha, the material one, and the condition likely we are the spirit soul and the superior energy, which is all still diverse energy, I mean, three different energies of the Lord.
Yeah, so we could observe that the energies of the Lord aren't one, but there are divisions given in the Shastra, and you can tell by their symptoms. As Bali Mardan Prabhu pointed out from this verse from the Vishnu Purana, that the material energy is obvious because within it are taking place fruit of activities. The struggle for self-satisfaction rather than satisfaction of the center, the supreme source of everything. Avidya karma samgyanya means that it's avidya, which is constituted by misidentification, thinking the bodies to be the self, and therefore working hard for fruit of activities, which bind us more and more in the material world. it's important to know the divisions of energy so that we can act accordingly. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives description of the three modes of material nature and painstakingly describes how each one of the symptoms of each one of them, as far as how they affect a person's consciousness in work, in determination, in the foods that they eat, and so on, so that we can, specifically, so that we can cultivate the mode of goodness, because only from that mode can we have illumination. What else did you hear so far?
You also told us about that it's not possible to get out of the material nature's hold by making plans, and one has to revive the relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So what does that mean?
So basically all the plans that we continue to make, thinking that we are in complete control. Our making plans is basically indicating that we are in control of something. I will do this and that will happen, and then I'll do this and that will happen. And when we try to do that, Maya always dashes our plans to the ground. But on the other hand, if we try to revive our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then Krishna actually really likes it, and he facilitates that, makes it easier for us to go back to him. Like, you take one step to him, he takes 10 towards you.
So the plans don't work out so well? Hasn't someone somewhere made a plan that's worked out in the material world? There must have been at some time somebody made some plan. Prahlad Maharaj says, since the beginning of time, people have made plans, and not once has it ever worked out. Everyone makes plans to be wealthy, happy, to stay permanently, but never once has it ever worked out. If it was I think, as Sri Dayananda Maharaj once pointed out, if it was a game show, it would be living entity zero, Maya, 10 trillion to the trillionth power. So this is an interesting way to put it. The mind makes plans to make some kind of permanent solution here in the material world, to stay here or to be happy. What are some of the plans what categories of plans that people make in order to become happy in the material world or to stave off suffering, which is most of the endeavor is to keep suffering away from one's door? What kind of plans can we make?
The most common thing that people try to do is accumulate money, because they think that if they have money, then they will have happiness.
And that's easy to get money, right?
Not always, Prabhuji.
No, it's very difficult. There's people die for it. Yeah, so money is, Prahlad Maharaj says, the translation Prabhupada gives is, money is the honey. People, they try very hard to make money, because if you have money, then you have some independence and you have some time off from the onslaught of material nature. But in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Kaviraj Goswami says that the Lord has filled up the universe with food and money, but you can only get as much as is allotted to you by your previous karma, no matter how hard you try. Tasyaivahetu prayateta kovido na labhite yad brahmatam upariyada. That the we shouldn't try so hard for that. Although it doesn't mean we shouldn't try at all, necessarily. You can do your due diligence according to the position of life that you're in, but we shouldn't try so hard, knowing that things come of their own accord and they also go away of their own accord as well. We can't control it. What other kind of plan making do people make? Yes, Dainidhi Prabhu.
Well, you hear this sometimes, that no matter how much money you have, if you're not healthy, you can't enjoy it. So a lot of people make a plan to be healthy so they can live a long life, to enjoy their life. But of course, I know that this is already almost known, but I just want to say that with all these plans, they can all be dovetailed. You know, for example, you can make as much money, but if you use that money in Krishna's service, then making the plan to make money is not a bad plan. If you plan on being healthy so you can serve Krishna a long time and very strongly, then that's a good plan to be healthy.
And how much energy should you put into being healthy according to Shastra?
You tell me.
Well, what's according to the Bhagavad Gita? Krishna tells us.
You don't eat too much.
Yeah. Yukta hara viharasya. He said it should be balanced or regulated. So that's, of course, you know, I saw one time some comedian, he was talking about people who go into the gym, the weight room, and they're lifting weights more and more and more and more, and they become so gigantic. And he was saying that he felt like coming in and saying, okay, you're done, you can stop now. But point is that we should be regulated in those things, Krishna says. Don't eat too much, don't eat too little. Don't exercise too little, don't exercise too much. Prabhupada, of course, maintained his body very carefully because when he came for his mission to America, he had an elderly body, apparently, and he was maintaining it. He had already suffered two heart attacks on the boat, and then a doctor told him, you got to exercise your heart. So he said, go for a walk every day, and that's what Prabhupada did. Everywhere he went, he would arrange to go on a walk in the morning time, which is the best time, Ayurvedically, just when the sun is coming up, and that the prana is very intense. So if you breathe in that air, and Prabhupada took massage to keep his circulation going, and he was very careful about what he ate also. Not eating too much, not eating too little. He wanted to eat on time. He was very particular about eating on time because his digestion was ready at a certain time, and also it had to be hot, and he ate certain things with certain spices to keep himself in good health. So, good point. Now about wealth, yes, you can earn wealth. Take example from Prabhupada's life. What did he say about his health, his wealth earning, and using it in Krishna's service? He had a plan for that, right? Did it work out?
No.
He said he planned to make money in order to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had given him an indication what he wanted him to do. And then he thought, I'm in a position to make money, so I'll make a lot of money and I'll use that to spread Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada said, Krishna dismantled everything. Yasyaha mana grinnami harishe tad dhanam shanai. When Krishna shows a special mercy, then he gradually takes away everything so that we feel helpless. So we have to be ready for that also. Best thing is to make a plan to be dependent on Krishna. Where does it say that in Shastra, that is the process of devotional service? That we should make a plan, or we should position ourselves so that we're always dependent on Krishna. It's in the shloka book. It's a famous shloka. It's from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Rakshishyateti Vishvaso Guptritve Varanam Tata. The verse starts in the shloka book with words that say that we should accept everything favorable and reject everything that's unfavorable. What does the word favorable, what's in Sanskrit it means? And you know it from Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Nyanavritam Krishnan Anukulyena. So the verse starts with Anukulyasya Sankalpa. So Sankalpa, you can find this in the verse, Anukulyasya Sankalpa. Anukulyasya means, Anukul means favorable things. That should be our Sankalpa. We should have a vow or a determination that we're accepting only those things that are favorable for our devotional service. What enhances it? We take that. And then the next verse, the next word in the line, did you find it?
407.
Anukulyasya Sankalpa. Pratikulyasya Varjanam. Varjanam means you give it up. So pratikul, there's anukul and pratikul. Pratikul means things that are unfavorable to your devotional service. And so those you should renounce, give them up. Then, next thing is about how we should take Krishna as our protector. Because Bhagavatam says, Deha patra kalatra deshu atma saini sa satsapi tesham pramata nidhanam paschanapi na paschati. In the material world, I take it that my body is going to protect me, my family is going to protect me. These are called fallible soldiers, atma saini sa satsapi. So the process of devotional service means rakshishyateti vishvaso. We should have this faith that Krishna is my protector. Guptritre varanam tata. That means then Krishna is also my maintainer. He's the one maintaining me. Everything's coming from him. Even if I work for a boss and the money comes apparently from him, it's actually coming from Krishna. Bali Mardan Prabhu is leaving. Hari Bol. Hare Krishna. Then? Atma Nishepa. Karpanye means that we should surrender everything. And these six are the steps of surrender, which are mentioned in the Shastra. So these six things we can remember. So this is the plans, this is the track we should be on, rather than plan making to stay alive in the material world, to conquer the material world, to become happy here, to stave off misery. Can we stop misery from coming? Is it possible?
No.
Not possible. And Vaishnavas don't even try to stop it. The mentality of the Vaishnav is that let misery come as it may come. Tatenu kampam susamikshamanu bunjana evatmakritam vipakam. Whatever is coming, whatever kinds of reaction is coming, I accept that as having been caused by myself. It's Krishna's mercy. It's simply a reaction in the material world. He doesn't try to make an adjustment to it. Dainiti Prabhu.
I just want to say, Prabhu,
use the mic.
Just for your information. Yes. I know you know this, but karpanya is humility.
Yes, humility.
Atma nishkepa is full surrender.
Thank you. One should always remain humble.
Not that was very humble of me, but...
What else did you hear or remember about these two verses? What were the two verses that we recited? We recited from Bhagavatam. So we looked at two verses. One was a verse in which Sutta Goswami is speaking to the sages of Naimisaranya, and he's saying, Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. And from the purport, mentioned there are many different kinds of Puranas. They're different, and these are meant for purification. By hearing them, by acting according to those directions, then we elevate ourselves, right?
You also said that Srimad Bhagavatam is the Amala Purana.
The Srimad Bhagavatam is the Amala Purana. This is the opinion of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He gave this meditation that we have. Arajo Bhagavan Vrajesha Tanayastad Dhamma Vrindavana Ramya Kachidupasana Vrajavidu Vargina Vokalpita. Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam Prema Pumartam Ahan Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Matamidam Tatradara Napara. He said that the Krishna and his Dham are non-different. The highest method of worshipping Krishna is that which was conceived by the gopis of Vrindavan, the spontaneous worship that they had. That the Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana, the evidence of the spiritual world. It's a completely perfect Purana. the ultimate goal of life is to attain prema. And these are the opinions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we hold those in the highest regard. Those are our goals. Anything else? And then the next verse we talked about was Vedanti Tat Tattva Vidas. That verse is about how Krishna has three different... the absolute truth is Advaya Gyan Tattva. He's one. But he's realized in three features. And what are the three features? Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So Brahman is the effulgence of Krishna. Can you prove it according to Bhagavad Gita? Someone says, actually, Brahman's the source of Krishna. How can you prove otherwise from the Praman in Bhagavad Gita? Brahmano hi pratishtaham amritasya vyasya cha shashvatasya cha dharmasya shukasya kantikasya cha. That the Krishna says that I'm the source of the Brahman. That is in chapter, last verses in chapter 14. Yeah. So Brahman is there. Where is Brahman talked about in the Sri Brahma Sanghita, the verse we chanted earlier? It's in Yasya Prabha Prabhupato Jagadanda Koti. Kotish Vishesha Vasudari Vibhuti Binam Tad Brahma Nishkalamanan Yasya Prabha Prabhupato Jagadanda Koti. So Krishna's divine effulgence is there. It's maintaining everything through that effulgence. Just like the sun is maintaining the universe, isn't it? All life and food sources and everything are coming from the sun. Correct? So all the universes are maintained by the Brahman effulgence and all the variety, everything. Yasya prabha prabhupato jagadanda koti koti shvishesha vasudari. And how about the paramatma? So that's the other feature of Krishna as spoken about in the verse from the Bhagavatam we're discussing today. Paramatma means? Super soul. Super soul is there within the heart. Where does it say that in the Bhagavad Gita? And what is the nature of the super soul?
Sarvasya chaho hrudi sannivishto matha partaram nanyat
matak smritir gyanam apoham chaho.
Vedascha sarver ahameva vedyo vedandikrut veda videva chaham. He says that I am the super soul sitting in the hearts of all living beings, and I am the knower of all the Vedas. And
what's coming from the super soul according to that verse?
I give the remembrance, forget. I am the origin of remembrance, forgetfulness of all living entities.
Knowledge. Yeah, so we can experience the presence of super soul within our heart by what? The remembrance, knowledge, forgetfulness. He's supplying, right? Any other things that Krishna talks about, the super soul in the Bhagavad Gita?
Chapter 13.
Chapter 13, what does he say?
So, I'm reading from the book. Sarvata Pani Padam Tat Sarvato Shi Shiro Mukham Sarvataha Shruti Mal Loke Sarvam Avritya Tishtati. Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way the super soul exists, pervading everything. And then there are several verses actually.
Give us another.
Okay. So there's verse number 15. Sarvendriya Gunabhasham, Sarvendriya Vivarjitam, Asaktam Sarva Bhritchaiva, Nirgunam Guna Bhuktarcha. The super soul is the original source of all senses, yet he is without senses. He is unattached, although he is the maintainer of all living beings. He transcends the mode of nature, and at the same time, he is the master of all the modes of material nature. Then there's 17. The 17 here. Abhibhaktam cha bhuteshu vibhaktam eva cha sthitam bhuta bhratir cha tadgeyam grashishnu prabha vishnu cha. Although the super soul appears to be divided among all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he divorces and develops all.
So Krishna is there within the heart. Right now he's sitting within the heart, giving remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. He's the source of the senses. He is directing us in all our wanderings. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara sarva bhutanam hride sharajuna tisthiti brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra rujani mayaya. I'm seated on it in this machine, and Krishna's there within the heart, and he's directing my wanderings. Man proposes and God disposes. So whatever desires I have, he's helping me to fulfill those desires. And I have some independence to desire in a certain way. We read last night that Krishna is neutral, and according to my desire, he's helping to fulfill that desire. What do you think of that? Is there an exception to that? Yes.
That's somewhat difficult to understand because on the one hand you are saying that when we make a plan that it doesn't work out ultimately. And then, on the other hand, God is there and fulfilling all our desires. I know there's a beautiful explanation, and I would love to hear it.
Well, it's like a child who wants to touch a fan, and the parents, or the father says, not a good idea, don't touch the fan, because it'll hurt your finger. And the child says, no, I want to touch it. And the father says, no, don't touch it. And finally, the father relents, so he turns the fan down to a speed that won't chop the child's finger off. And then he says, okay, touch the fan. And the child touches the fan. He is startled by it, even maybe a little hurt, but not injured. And hopefully he learns a lesson not to touch the fan. So the material world is not Krishna's idea for us to be in the material world, and he goes to great lengths to explain to us that it's not our home and that if we touch it, it'll hurt. But I insist, though, I want to try it. I want to do this. So I go on trying. And Krishna's benevolently giving us an opportunity to exercise our independence. And we do have independence to choose that. That means to be in the material world or to raise ourselves to the spiritual platform and engage willingly and surrender to Krishna, willingly in Krishna's service. So we have that opportunity.
Does injustice actually exist in the world? And if so, why does God allow any injustice to exist?
According to the Shastra, there is no injustice. And this actually is quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the section of Ramachandra Puri, who was a disciple of Srila Ishvara Puri. And of Madhavendrapuri, pardon me. And at the time Madhavendrapuri was leaving the world, he was in separation from Krishna in a state of high ecstasy, and he was calling out, oh my Lord, I could not get shelter at Mathura. And when this unqualified disciple heard him speaking in that way, he said, Gurudev, you should really be meditating on Brahma, not crying out like this for shelter in Mathura. And Madhavendra Puri told him, get out of my sight, you sinful rascal, because if I see you when I'm leaving this world, I certainly won't attain the destination. Because he was so impudent and offensive to his spiritual master that then he developed material desires and a tendency to criticize Vaishnavas from then on. He was rejected by his spiritual master. And in the course of that, he came and criticized Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all of his associates, trying to find some fault in them. And in that section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the verse is invoked, which says that we should see that the material world is going on perfectly, that it's under the Lord's arrangement, under the Lord's control, and things that are going on are according to his arrangement. Therefore, we should neither criticize others or praise them, because things are happening in a uniform way. But of the two, according to Shastra, it's okay to praise, and it's not okay to criticize. Yes.
But if all the policemen and judges and county district attorneys and prosecutors adopt that mentality, then all the criminals will just run rampant.
They, a violent priest or a nonviolent policeman are not wanted, and nor is that their duty according to Shastra. And Shastra is like the ring in the nose of the bull. So material nature is going on by the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he is time. He's the time factor, and he controls the material nature through the inexorable time factor. And therefore, everyone's under his control, ultimately. But within that, living entities have an opportunity to act according to their minute independence. And when they do, they get a just reaction, which is called karma. And the Lord has set that system up of karma because it's just. However, there is a principle that supersedes that, or which transcends justice, and that's mercy. Because if there wasn't justice, then there'd be no meaning to mercy. Because there is justice, therefore, when mercy is administered, so to speak, then it means that even though you didn't deserve it, according to the laws, still you're being given an opportunity. So according to what we are reading and plan making, we should make a plan to surrender to Krishna based on the six limbs of surrender, which are anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam rakshishiteti vishvaso guptritre varanam tata. Then atmanishepa karpanye shadvidhim sharanagati. These are the six limbs of surrender. Accepting things favorable, rejecting things which are unfavorable. Then considering that Krishna is my protector, that Krishna is my maintainer, that I surrender everything and I should always be very humble. These are the six limbs of surrender. So we can make a plan for that. That's a plan that'll work. Did that analogy answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, good. I don't think I satisfied Akurinath Prabhu, though.
I'm still, I guess, I'm somewhat satisfied that it seems like for the policeman, to do his proper duty to try to do justice in the world, then he has to try to intervene and prevent injustices and punish those who've committed them, which that punishment is actually to benefit them so that they don't have to undergo a more severe punishment by karma if they were allowed to not escape conviction, escape punishment, arrest and conviction. But then for the priest or for one, you know, for the wise person who wants to explain how God is working in the world and everything, then they can also show that that really the whole thing is going on under the control of God, and that injustice doesn't really happen. But what I don't understand is, though, that I mean, people do overstep their boundaries. They do take things that aren't within their what's allotted for them. They are cruel to other people and cause misery to other people. Is it our philosophy that when someone suffers at the hands of someone who's overstepping their boundaries, that suffering is also due to that person because of karma? I mean, if the cows that are being slaughtered every day, the little chickens whose beaks are being cut off by the factory farms, are they really just enduring the suffering that was due to them because of the previous injustices they did to someone else? Or is it all arranged in such a way that nobody ever suffers any wrong that they didn't actually deserve?
It's all arranged. That comes out in the discussion between Maharaj Parikshit and the bull, that it's all arranged. And for us to figure out how it's arranged is impossible. Don't try to figure out karma exactly, but figure out the principle behind it, that there isn't an exact system. The combinations and permutations are beyond our comprehension. But there is a supreme controller, and it all comes back to his arrangement. And in the material world, there is a perfect justice. That's what the Shastra is saying. It all balances out on the material side. Balances out. Tasyaiva hetu prayate tu kovido. Don't try to balance it out yourself. It's already balanced. It's reassuring, actually, because it balances out. Shastra says, try to get the mercy. Try to transcend that machine of the material energy that's going on. I heard Prabhupada saying this morning that someone was asking about different species of life. Jalaja navalakshani stavara laksha vimsati. The Shastra explains how there's the 8,400,000 species of life. There are certain categories and quantities in each. And each of them is, they have a particular body according to their karma and their desires. So anyway, somebody was asking about butterflies and say, oh, I wouldn't mind being a butterfly. And Prabhupada said, then you can become a butterfly. He said that the material nature is very precise. If you maintain that desire, then it will fulfill your desire. Therefore, it's a dangerous situation to be in touch with material energy because it's uncompromising. And when we become infected, when we infect a particular mode of material nature and we develop a certain set of desires, the machine, the perfect machinery of the material nature fulfills those. So to come to a position of awakened intelligence when I decide to leave this material world is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described as the awakening of the soul and the greatest opportunity. It's like finding out you're actually wealthy. You have a choice in the matter. You know, up to this point, you've simply been pushed along and you haven't even tried to get out. But when you meet somebody who tells you that there's a way out, you can get out now, and your whole life changes. And we should take full advantage of that. Shastra is encouraging us, Tamasi Ma Jo Tirgamai, go towards that light, take the advantage while you can. Don't take it for granted. Don't stay sleeping. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago.
To quote a verse in support of that.
Please do.
Brahmane Brahmite Kon Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beej. So while the living entity, while it is roaming through all these planetary systems, then one who is really very Bhagyavan, what's the English for Bhagyavan?
Bhagya, fortunate.
Fortunate, yeah. One who is really very fortunate, he, through the mercy of Krishna or through the mercy of Guru, gets the devotional service. So through the, and then the way it goes is through the mercy of Krishna you get the Guru, and through the mercy of Guru then he takes you to back to Krishna by developing your kripa of devotional service.
Yes. We're wandering and wandering. Brahmate, Brahmate. So Krishna's, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described that we're wandering and wandering. He said just like logs floating endlessly on a river, and then somehow or other one comes to wash up on the shore. So he said, somehow we come to meet a devotee physician, a vaidya. And the vaidya gives medicine, gives hymns to sing that'll actually cure you, and instructions. Act like this, don't act like that. And by the hymns and the instructions, we can extricate ourselves from the material nature. Right, Akaranath Prabhu? Convinced? Dainidhi wants in. Bring him in.
Let's see if I can formulate this question. On one hand, we're trying to purify our desires by hearing and chanting, you know, following the process of Krishna consciousness, the nine process devotional service. And on the other hand, or not on the other hand, but we're also, it seems to me, we're trying to get mercy rather than justice. You know, on one hand, though, it seems like if we're following and we're doing the proper sadhana, that the judgment would be that, okay, you're following nicely, therefore you get this. But on the other hand, well, for example, I'm just thinking like of Tulsi Maharani or Yani Kani Chapapani, that if you, every step you take, Srimati Tulsi Maharani is so merciful that if you worship her, that even if you kill a Brahmin, that sin is taken away. So, what am I asking here? Well, let me go back to what my real question is. The real question is through intellect we know what we should be doing, and we're trying to purify our desires by following the process. But on the other hand, maybe our desires aren't becoming purified, and we're still desiring everything wrong, even though we know it's wrong. You know, we're still following our mind and senses, even though we know in our hearts this is the wrong thing to do. So, judgmentally, you know, one who's acting according to his mind and senses, especially if it's sinful, you know, the judgment would be, boom, okay, you know, this is how you're acting, and this is what you desire. So, therefore, this is what you get: the body of a dog. Or a butterfly. But on the other hand, you know, he knows in his heart this is what he should be doing. And, for example, worshiping Tulsi or offering your obeisances to the deities, you know, there's all this mercy that's coming. So, you know, it's hard, you know, I mean.
So what you're describing is an interim stage. And Krishna, this is addressed by Krishna in the 11th canto where he says, Jata Shraddho Matkatasu Nirvina Vinachetasa. He said that Jata Shraddha, your faith has awakened, Matkatasu, in topics about me. But Nirvina, you're not able to actually do it. So Krishna gives advice for people in that condition. He says that even though you know sense gratification is bad and it causes harm, but your faith is awakened nonetheless in Krishna Katha, you should not lament. You should go on faithfully performing your duty. And actually, I take that back. Not necessarily you shouldn't lament. You should lament your condition, but not to the point of being pathological so that you can't perform your devotional service. Because Krishna does give this instruction that even though your faith is awakened, but you can't overcome the sense gratification, you should faithfully go on with your service, and you should perform it, knowing that eventually you'll come to the proper condition. May I have a fourth canto, chapter number 26? Yeah, this is a nice verse from the fourth canto, chapter 26, which describes Hare Krishna, how, actually it's a very interesting verse. It's a verse about how, it's in the chapter that Paranjana goes to the forest to hunt and his wife becomes angry. Is this it? Yes, thank you very much. Listen to this. Anuninye tashanakar viro nunaya kovidaha paspashra pasparsha padayugalam aha kotsangalalitam. Because the king was very expert in flattery, he began to pacify his queen very slowly. First he touched her two feet, then embraced her nicely, seated her on his lap, and began to speak as follows. Now here, this is it Narada? Did you, is that what you said?
The story of Paranjana is being told.
Yeah,
by
Narada Muni. To Vasudeva. No?
To King
Prachandibari. Yeah, King Prachandibari. And it's an allegory. In any case, the king has gone off to the forest to hunt, and his wife becomes angry at him for being away. Now here's the, and so he comes back and he's flattering her, takes her on his lap, you know, is embracing her, and here's the purport Prabhupada gives. One has to awaken his Krishna consciousness by first regretting his past deeds. Just as King Puranjan began to flatter his queen, one should, by deliberate consideration, raise himself to the platform of Krishna consciousness. I'm going to read that sentence again, because this herein lies the key to our success. Just as King Puranjan began to flatter his queen, one should, by deliberate consideration, raise himself to the platform of Krishna consciousness. To attain such an end, one must touch the lotus feet of the spiritual master. Krishna consciousness cannot be achieved by self-endeavor. One must therefore approach a self-realized Krishna conscious person and touch his lotus feet. Prahlad Maharaj therefore said, Naisham matistha varuru kramangrim sprishat yanartha pagamo yadartha mahiyasam padarajo bishekam nishkinchananam navranita yavat. One cannot come to the precincts of Krishna consciousness unless he touches the dust of the lotus feet of a person who has become a Mahatma, a great devotee. This is the beginning of the surrendering process. Lord Krishna wants everyone to surrender unto him, and this surrendering process begins when one touches the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. By sincerely rendering service to a bona fide spiritual master, one begins his spiritual life in Krishna consciousness. Touching the lotus feet of a spiritual master means giving up one's false prestige and unnecessarily puffed up position in the material world. Those who remain in the darkness of material existence due to their falsely prestigious positions, so-called scientists and philosophers, are actually atheists. They do not know the ultimate cause of everything. Although bewildered, they are not ready to surrender themselves to the lotus feet of a person who knows things in their proper perspective. In other words, one cannot arouse Krishna consciousness simply by his own mental speculation. One must surrender to a bona fide spiritual master. Only this process will help one. You have to give up false prestige, take shelter. It would be nice if we could look at the verse, Jata Shraddho Matkatasu. It's in the 11th canto. Jata Shraddho Matkatasu. Hare Krishna.